Chapter 11. "Taslin?" I asked, as I looked over at my father. I replayed dinner over in my mind and tried to figure out where I had gone wrong, and I was sure he had seen something between us, though I had kept my hands to myself. The village green stretched ahead of us as we strolled further away from the bakery and the women I loved. Above us, the stars twinkled down from the darkened sky like they could hear every word and looked forward to where the conversation led.
"Yes," the older man said. "Now, I understand she's a beautiful woman."
He clasped his hands behind him while his attention stayed pinned to the grass strip that ran the length of the village and separated the last buildings from the forest. He pursed his lips a few times like he wasn't sure how to continue, but finally he ran a hand through his hair and turned to look at me.
"Dad, I started. "I know you're up in the city and things are different there," he interrupted. "But you're still my son, and I expect you to act with honor."
"Honor?" I asked. I racked my brain as I tried to think of how I had acted dishonorably, and could only assume he thought I was having an affair with Taslin.
"Yes," my father said. "And loyalty."
He glanced back toward the bakery with a small smile as he seemed to lose himself in memories. He stuffed his hands in the pockets of his pants, took a deep breath, and then prepared himself for whatever speech he had planned.
"You're about to get married," the old baker said. "And you're looking at another woman the way you should be looking at your wife."
"Dad," I started, but I was cut off when he held up a beefy hand.
"Don't interrupt me, Zaire. Now, I don't know what it's like in the city, but when you take your vows, you're promising to love your wife for the rest of your life. And that means you're going to have to let go of some things."
He nodded his head in agreement with his own statement, then motioned for me to follow him as we started to walk again. I sighed and fell into step beside him while I waited for him to finish his lecture. I had intended to keep my relationship with Taz a secret, but if my dad thought that I was having an affair with her, then I needed to clear that up and explain a few things.
"There were plenty of beautiful women that chased after me," he continued, "before and after I met your mother."
He gave me a smirk as he puffed out his chest with pride.
"But I take my vows to her seriously, and that means that I have to turn down temptation. No matter how pretty that woman is, it's about loyalty. That's how we've made it work for so long."
"Dad," I said when he paused.
"Son," he said as he looked over at me. "I know that fox girl is beautiful, but if you're serious about your fiancé, then you need to end whatever is going on between the two of you."
"Dad," I laughed, then held up my hands in surrender when his eyes narrowed at me.
"Dad, it's not like that."
"Well, I mean, it is, but it isn't."
"Explain," the baker said, as he put his hands on his hips and stared me down.
"My fiancé Janel is an elvenborn," I said.
"And what does that have to do with anything?" he asked.
"In an elvenborn marriage, it's customary and expected to have concubines," I started. "Janel will be my wife, and Taslin will be one of my concubines. They're friends and are both happy to share me. We'll all be supporting each other as we work together toward our goals."
He frowned at me as he processed what I had said, and the lines of his face deepened when his eyebrows clashed together.
His hands slipped from his hips into his pockets, and he nodded as he made a decision about the new information, then gave me a small smile.
"So, your future wife and the fox girl are friends?" he asked.
"Yes, Janel and Taslin are very close." I decided to leave out how close they were, though the memory of them together in bed made my mouth run dry, and I suddenly couldn't wait to experience it again.
"That's good,"
my father said with a nod of approval.
"But if you're going to keep a concubine, you need to make sure that you can still take care of both of them."
We had reached the end of the village green, and the road into town opened up in front of us. If we crossed the road, the grassy area kept going until it hit the farmlands. But my dad stopped and turned around. Then he motioned for me to do the same as we started to walk back toward the bakery.
"How are you planning to make enough money to keep both women and take care of any children you have?" he asked. "I can't imagine you're making very much money as an alchemist." And if you're planning on being one of those traveling fixers, you're going to miss your children growing up.
I laughed and shook my head as my father switched gears and started to question my plan for my life. I had missed the man's practicality and his tendency to have a plan for every scenario. It was one of the traits that I could see in myself when I worked.
Janel's family is wealthy enough to take care of us and any kids we might have, I told him. You're marrying rich?
He said, as he lifted his eyebrows and gave me a proud smile.
Yes, Janel's from a noble family. Her dowry alone will keep her, Taslin, and our children in comfort, even if something might happen to me.
The possibility that my girls would have to live without me hurt. But at least I knew they would have each other. I still hoped that I would survive the meeting with Mr. K and the Iron Dwarves so that I could expose them to the king. But even beyond that, I had to worry about the Rusanos, and there was always the chance that Cad and Otso might do something stupid.
Good, my father said with a satisfied nod of his head.
I snapped my attention back to the man beside me and tried to force my worries back down.
If you're going to have concubines, you need to make sure you're giving your love equally, he said. Even if one of them is your legal wife, you can't just spend all of your time with her and leave Taslin alone.
I promise I'll give each of them all of my love, I said. And as a precaution, the marriage contract already has clauses in regards to any children we will have and the roles of the concubines in our household.
Marriage contract? The baker asked in a skeptical tone.
Nobles, I answered with a shrug. Normally, the concubines in an elven-born household are servants to the wife, and their kids are too. But all of us agreed that any concubines and children would be free and treated as equals.
That's good, he nodded his approval. It's important that you share your time, love, and resources with your wife and Taslin.
I will, I said.
All right, he said, as he started to climb the stairs. I'm proud of you, and I'm looking forward to meeting your wife.
You're going to like her, I said, and Taslin.
That fox girl does seem real smart, he said with a big smile.
Much smarter than me, I grinned. I'd be dead by now if it wasn't for her.
Dead? He asked.
I'll tell you later, I told him, though I had no intention of ever telling the man who raised me about all of the trouble that we'd been in. We reached the top of the outside stairs, and he pulled the door open for me so I could go inside ahead of him, then followed me in. The ladies had cleared the table of the leftovers and the dishes, but they were still exactly where we'd left them, like they hadn't moved at all. They looked up as my father and I walked in, and the sight of Nora as a man took a second for me to get used to before I grinned at them.
Everything okay?
Nora asked as her eyes shifted from my father to me. Yeah, though I think we should be going for the night. We can come back tomorrow to pack everything you'll need for the trip.
You're not staying here?
My mother asked with a quick glance to the large man next to me. We're going to sleep in the coach, I explained.
Well,
she said with a frustrated sigh.
I guess that's fine.
We'll be spending the next week with them,
my father said as he put a comforting hand on her shoulder.
You're right,
my mom said.
If you need anything during the night, don't be afraid to come up.
Yes, ma'am, I said. My mom stood and came to give me a hug that was so tight it stole the breath out of my lungs. Then she patted my back, then took a step back and grabbed my face in her hands. Her eyes were filled with tears, and she cleared her throat as she pushed her emotions back down.
You sleep well,
she told me before she turned to look at Taslin and Nora.
It was so nice meeting you two. I'm looking forward to getting to know you better.
It was nice meeting you too,
Taz said with a warm smile and a nod of her head.
It's going to be wonderful to get to know you better,
Nora said, and her voice cracked like she was a teenage boy rather than the adult man she was supposed to be. See you tomorrow, I told my parents, then held out my hand for Taslin. The fox woman stood, then smoothed her long black dress before she walked around the table to lace her fingers through mine. She bobbed her head in respect to my parents as she took Nora's hand, and together we all walked out of the back door and down the stairs. The large black carriage had relocated from the dusty street out front to the side of the building. It had darkened windows so no one could see inside, though I knew that we'd be able to see out in case any of the townspeople decided to try and break in. The seats had been replaced with a silk bed that took up the entire inside and welcomed us as soon as I opened the door.
What did your dad want to talk about?
Nora asked. I waited for the two women to pass me and climb inside before I followed them. When I had secured the door and locked it, I turned to look at the beautiful women who were spread out on the comfortable mattress pad. Nora's form changed in front of me as her skin flickered with the familiar glow of fire, and her hair curled into dry flames. Her round, full breasts replaced the masculine chest, and her curves became more gentle and feminine. He wanted me to break up with Taz before I got married, I said with a shrug. But I explained about elven-born marriages and the concubines.
Your mother had the same conversation with me,
Taz said with a smirk.
Though she told me not to let you lead me on.
And what did you say? I asked.
I told her that you were the best man I'd ever met, and that Jamal and I look forward to sharing you.
The sexy red-headed woman said as she grabbed my tunic and pulled me down next to her.
That made her happy, especially when I talked about kits.
Kits? I smiled at her.
Or the like.
The fox girl blushed a bit.
Children and such. That's how to smooth things over with in-laws.
Now all we have to do is explain that Nora is actually Nora, I said, and introduce them to Ilara.
That can wait,
Nora said as she collapsed into the seat next to me.
I'm enjoying the disguise.
Are you sure? I asked. If my parents can accept Taz, then they should be fine with you, too.
Oh, yes,
the djinn said, and she ran her fingers up my shirt as she snuggled into me.
It's fun to have a secret.
All right, I said, then pressed a quick kiss on her lips. We'll have to tell them eventually.
But for now,
Nora yawned.
I'll pretend to be Noor.
I cuddled into the two beautiful women on either side of me as exhaustion washed over me. My eyelids were heavy, and all I wanted to do was drift into a dreamless night with the two of them pressed against me.
I like your parents,
Taz said, as she laid her head on my shoulder.
They're nice, and your mom was so sweet when she worried you were taking advantage of me.
I'm glad, I said, then kissed her forehead. They're your family now, too, both of you.
Oh, family.
Nora yawned.
I like that.
I couldn't tell what time it was when I woke up, but Taslin was already awake and sat against the wall of the carriage with a book in her hand. I watched her for a few seconds before she felt my stare, and when our eyes met, my heart warmed in my chest. Good morning, I said with a sleepy smile. Did you sleep well?
I did,
she said.
Did you have any more nightmares?
Nora asked as she stirred next to me. No, thankfully.
Good.
She grinned, then reached up to kiss me.
Should we break our fast?
Yes, I could use a strong cup of bean brew. And some sausage rolls.
Should we bring some to your parents?
She asked. They've probably already eaten. Bakers get up early. But we can go check with them.
Then we should check that lake,
Taz said, as she snapped her book shut. The lake? I asked. And despite my head being foggy with sleep, I remembered the mystery of the frozen lake. Right. We can figure out what's going on with it while my parents pack.
I think there might be an elemental,
Taz said.
You could use an ice spirit.
Good idea. I think I have an empty emerald in my bag.
An emerald should be perfect,
the fox woman said, then scooted forward toward the door.
Is the lake not usually frozen at this time?
Nora asked, and began to transform again. Her skin darkened, and her hair became short, dark curls as her masculine disguise slid into place. She had chosen a white Diaflorian outfit with flowy white pants and a long tunic that had triangles along the long sleeves and the bottom of the shirt. No, I answered. It should be thawed by now. I think Taz is right about something being in the water.
Do we have to kill it?
The disguised woman looked sad about the idea of taking another life. It'll destroy the lake if we don't, I said. And the people here need the fish to eat. Before Taslin could open the door, I grabbed my jacket and pulled it on.
Oh, okay,
the djinn said, and I could tell she was a bit unconvinced. Besides, if I capture the elemental in my gemstone, it will live forever, in a sense, I added.
Like Ferex,
she agreed. Yup, I stated.
Besides,
Taz chimed in.
Elementals aren't really alive. They're rogue manifestations of arcane energy. You can't really kill anything that isn't alive or even conscious. Now, let's get this show on the road. Let's,
the lovely djinn agreed. Taz swung open the door to the carriage, then stepped out into the early morning light. She pulled her hood up over her head, and her ears poked out of the slits while her fluffy tail swished back and forth. She tipped her face up, then sniffed the air a few times before a smile pulled on her petal-pink lips.
"Your parents are already baking,"
she said as she turned to look at us. "They should be packing," I huffed. I offered my hand to Nora as she climbed down, but she shook her head, then walked down the steps and jumped onto the grass.
"Maybe they're making food for us to take on the trip,"
she said in her lower voice. She cleared her throat, then hummed until her tone had lowered into a male range like she had the day before. "They better be," I grumbled. There were customers in the store when I walked around the building, and the open sign looked out into the street. A few of the people inside recognized me when I walked in, and they waved as they strolled out with their usual bags of bread and sweet treats. "Shouldn't you guys be packing?" I asked my mother when I walked up to the register.
"We'll do that later this morning, honey,"
she responded with a warm smile.
"We need to go ahead and sell all of the food we prepped last night before you got here."
I sighed. Then I leaned over to kiss my mother on the cheek as she rang out the next customer. I wasn't surprised that they would try to sell the last of their goods, though I hoped they wouldn't stay open all day because we needed to get on the road. Even with a magical carriage, we would be hard-pressed to get back in time for the wedding.
"Did you guys eat already?"
Nora asked as she looked at a display case of chocolate cookies.
"Oh, yes, dear,"
my mother said.
"We eat before we open the store."
"We saved you some sausage rolls,"
my father said, as he brought a tray of sausage rolls, biscuits, and cheese from the back.
"Those are still your favorites?"
"Yes," I said. The sweet, flaky bread that was wrapped around the sausage smelled like honey and mixed in the air with the spicy scent of the sausage. It broke apart when I bit into it, while the sausage coated my tongue in sage and chili powder.
Oh, this is even better than I remember," I groaned as I swallowed the first bite. "Better than what they make at the school?"
my dad asked with a wink.
"Definitely,"
I said, then stuffed the rest of the roll into my mouth.
"Do you mind if I try some?"
Nora asked as she turned away from the display of sweets.
"It might help when I make all of us food. I could better replicate it."
"Of course,"
the baker said, and he held the tray out to her and then watched as she took one, then bit into it.
"You're a little thin for a young man. You should eat a few of them."
"Thank you,"
she said, and a blush crawled up her cheeks.
"These really are amazing."
My father cleared his throat and nodded his head, but I could see the pride that swelled in his chest as he turned to Taslin.
"Do you want to try one?" he asked.
"Thank you,"
the beautiful fox woman said.
"They smell wonderful."
"Do you have any bean brew?" I questioned as I turned back to my mom.
"It's right over there,"
she said with a wave to a large pot of bean brew on the counter behind her.
"Oh, thanks," I said.
"We're going down to the lake to figure out why it's frozen over."
"Perfect,"
my mother said.
"Taslin, you're a mage, aren't you? We could use one. That thing has been frozen over since winter, and by now it should be teeming with fish."
"I am,"
Taz said.
"But your son has magic, too."
"Oh, that's nice of you to say, but he's human, my dear,"
the older woman said with a gentle smile.
"It's true, Mom," I said.
I pulled on the fire from Sal's emerald and let it fill my right hand as I held it up to show her.
"When?"
she gasped.
How?
"It's recent," I told her. "Taslin is actually my tutor. She's helped me get the hang of how to use it, and I've even started to practice battle magic."
"How?"
my father asked, as he walked up to run his hand over the flame.
"This should be impossible."
"I don't know," I lied. "But I should be able to help with whatever is going on with the lake."
"Our son is a mage,"
my mother whispered.
"No wonder an elven-born noble girl is in love with him."
We should go," I said. I poured some of the strong black bean brew into three paper cups, then balanced them in my hand as I walked back around the counter. I handed one to Taslin and then Nora before I took a long swig of my own.
"You should start packing," I told my parents.
"As soon as we sell the last of the rolls,"
my mother promised.
"You should save some for the trip," I said with a smile. "It's been years since I've been able to eat them."
"Okay, honey,"
she laughed.
"Good luck at the lake."
Taslin and Nora followed me out, and we walked through the streets toward the massive body of water. I avoided the town square as much as I could, but I could still hear the market and the merchants shouting their wares even from a few streets over. I didn't want to answer any more questions than I had to, especially if there was a creature in the water, and the fewer people near the water when I captured it in the stone, the better. Any ideas what it might be? I asked Taslin, as we stopped at the edge of the frozen lake.
It might be an ice elemental,
the fox woman said. She bent down to study the frozen waves, then ran her fingers over the frosted grass. Her pupils dilated as she looked for an aura, but after a few seconds she just sighed and stood back up.
It probably came into being during the winter,
she muttered.
Though this looks like it froze over fast. The water even has waves, rather than the usual flatter surface we would see if it just turned to ice during the winter.
I'm going to blast it with Valeris's fire, I said. If it's an elemental, that should make it come out. I reached into my pocket and wrapped my hand around the bag that held my soul gems as I pulled on the fire magic. Fire pooled into my hands as I lifted them into the air and aimed them at the solid surface of the water. The heat of the flames licked at my skin, then arched up and slammed into the ice to melt wherever it touched.
It's refreezing,
Nora said from beside me. I peered through the steam that had started to rise from the surface of the lake and saw that she was right. As soon as I moved the flames away, the water turned back to solid ice, and even when I held the heat on a spot longer, it still re-solidified as soon as I moved on. I dropped my hands and let the fire die down so that I didn't use all of the stone's energy before I figured out how to best use it.
There!
The djinn gasped as she pointed to movement. Just below the frozen surface was the shadow of a large serpentine creature.
It's an ice worm,
Taslin said. So how do we kill it? I asked. It's just refreezing the lake every time I blast it with fire.
We have to drain the lake,
she answered. I stared at her, then looked back out to the water, but I had no idea how we would drain an entire lake. If I had a few days, I could probably make a device, but I had no idea where I would store the water. I knew there was nothing in town that could store all of it. I might be able to make something to do that, but it would take at least a few days, I sighed.
I could help,
Nora said. We need to be able to save whatever fish are still alive in there, I told her.
Nora,
Taz said, as she turned her attention from the lake to the disguised woman next to me.
If Zare melts the ice into water, can you pull it into the air? That should keep the ice worm in the bottom of the lake, and then once we're done, you can drop all of the water back in. I can do that,
the djinn responded. So we have a plan, I said with a smile. Let's do this. I pulled on the fire magic, and I hoped that Valeris would still have enough energy to melt the ice. Are you ready? I asked, as I looked over at the woman in disguise.
Yes,
she grinned at me. Orange and yellow flames flowed from my fingertips and out to the lake. The heat started to melt the ice again, but this time before it could solidify again, Nora pulled it up into the air. I worked fast, and soon most of the lake hovered in the air above the pit that had held the water. I could see the ice worm squirm as it tried to find any hint of liquid, but Nora held it all too far out of its reach. The steam started to clear as I released the fire I had used to melt the ice, and I was glad to see that at least some of the plant life at the bottom of the lake had survived. But with the last of the wisps of steam evaporated, I could see the ice worm in its entirety, and I gulped as I realized it was so much bigger than I'd thought. It was at least 20 feet long, with no eyes that I could see, but it did have a gaping mouth with rows and rows of teeth that flowed down the inside of its maw. The giant monster flopped onto the ground with a thud that shook the ground beneath me. It curled in on itself like it was about to jump again. The earth beneath it started to freeze as it drew up what little water I had left at the bottom of the lake. But then it stopped and turned its massive head toward me. I realized that I had started to call the fire back into my hands, and I began to panic as the creature decided to attack. I lifted my hands while I pulled on all of the magic Valeris's stone still had. The yellow and orange flames were eager to escape, and the power rushed forward in an impressive arc of hungry fire. Shit, 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 I whispered as the thing screeched. But then it continued to barrel forward even as pieces of it started to melt and fall away. I slid 1 foot backwards as I braced myself, and I put every ounce of magic I had into the attack. My legs had started to shake, but the last push of fire wrapped around the creature's body and gripped it like chains. I let out a relieved sigh when the worm collapsed a foot from me. Its mouth tried to chomp at me, but I was too far away. Okay, I said in a shaky voice, as I straightened and released the fire I had summoned. I had probably depleted the stone for the rest of the day, but the creature was dead. My leg warmed as the blue sparks of the monster's soul disappeared into the emerald in my pocket.
You can drop the water.
Nora nodded. Sweat beaded on her forehead and ran down her neck. But with a snap of her fingers, the water splashed down. She collapsed to her knees beside me and took deep breaths as I bent down to check on her.
I made a fire,
she huffed. Then she used her sleeve to wipe away the sweat and stare at it in confusion.
I'm sorry, I said. You did wonderful.
Of course I did,
she said with a grin. I laughed and shook my head as I offered her my hand. Then I pulled her to her feet.
The lake is back to normal,
a young boy exclaimed as he ran up to us.
You guys fixed the lake!
We did, I said, as I turned shakily to look at him, and I hoped that he hadn't seen the soul of the creature disappear into my pocket.
You should be able to fish soon. The lake will get rid of its body. It shouldn't be a problem now that it's dead.
I'm gonna go tell my dad,
he said, before he ran off toward the town square.
We should check on my parents, I said, as I watched the little boy disappear among the buildings.
Do you think they've started packing?
Nora asked. I doubt it, I grumbled. I strolled toward the bakery with my girls by my side, and I sighed when I saw that the sign in the window was still flipped over to show that it was open.
You're still open? I asked.
We're just about to close,
my mother said. She had several boxes in front of her, with their lids open to reveal the pastries inside, and all of the display cases were empty.
How'd the lake go?
My father asked as he came out from the back.
It's taken care of, I said. The fish should be back soon.
I just can't believe that my son can do magic,
my mother gushed. Why don't you two go pack? We can finish up the rest of the food.
I think you'll be a little distracted, my father said with a glance behind us.
Outside of the store was a crowd of onlookers. Most of them were children, but there were a few adults that lingered on the edges and peered inside the windows.
I'll help them pack,
Taslin said.
They'll want to talk to the two men who got rid of the ice worm.
She gave me a kiss on the cheek, then winked at Nora before she herded my parents up to their apartment.
Shall we?
I asked, as I motioned for Nora to go ahead of me. Cheers lifted into the air as soon as I opened the door, and everyone started to talk at once.
Can you really do magic?
A little girl with pigtails asked.
Yes, I answered. Can you show us? Said a teenage boy in a leather apron.
Sure, I said. I was tempted to try my new ice powers, but I didn't want to risk the people around me if I couldn't control it. Instead, I squatted down in front of the kids and reached for Sal's fire. Then I let the little yellow and orange flames dance across my fingers.
That's so amazing!
The little girl squealed as she clapped her hands together. There were gasps of surprise in the crowd, then whispers as people started to tell stories about me. The adults told tales of when I was younger, while the kids were excited about how I had drained the lake.
Can you do any other tricks?
The little boy asked as he bounced on the balls of his feet.
Yes, I said with a bright smile. Watch this.
I pulled magic from the air elemental and directed the little wisps of wind towards some of the dust in the street.
I always knew he was special,
an older woman I didn't recognize said.
He used fire to melt the lake and kill the thing inside,
the little boy from the lake said.
I saw it too,
a man with a gray beard and balding head said from the back of the crowd.
He and that boy used their powers to get rid of that ice worm.
Panic flared momentarily as I realized that at least two people had seen me deal the death blow to the elemental. I waited for one of them to say something about the way its soul had flowed toward me, but they were too busy with their account of how Nora had held the melted ice in the air so I could kill the creature that held their lake captive. I listened as more tales of me as a kid joined the conversation, and soon people were sure that they had seen me perform magic even when I was younger. I just hoped that of all the stories that were circulating, not a single one involved my gems.